Welcome to David Clark's We Are Superman podcast, episode number 211. I am your host, Bill Stahl, and this is The Power Play. Thank you for joining me on The Power Play. Before I get into the main topic for today from the In Case You Missed It department, there are a couple of really interesting things in the world of sports today. One was Rafael Nadal won the French Open title for the 14th time. Most tennis players never get 14 majors, which are, you know, the four major tournaments, the Australian Open, the French Open, Wimbledon, and the U.S. Open. And Nadal has won 14 of the French Open and 22 majors overall, which puts him two now ahead of his closest rivals, Novak Djokovic and Roger Federer. So just an incredible achievement. Of course, we should not forget, though, he does not have the all-time record for all genders. That record actually belongs to Margaret Court, who won 24 majors, and Serena Williams has 22 majors, 23, I should say, and Steffi Graf has 22. So Nadal tied Steffi Graf, but basically he's got the most men's majors, and he's 35 years old. It's hard to believe he won his first French Open 17 years ago, and he's still out there going and winning the one of the most difficult tournaments in the world. They play on a softer clay surface and requires some a lot longer points than on a hard court, and he's just pretty remarkable how he's held together and an amazing achievement. So in case that flew under your radar. And the other event that took place today was Ukraine was playing for a spot in the World Cup soccer tournament that'll take place in Qatar in November. Obviously, very huge sentimental choice. Ukraine had to beat Scotland earlier this week and then Wales to advance, but it was one and done in each case. So earlier on Wednesday in Glasgow, Scotland, they beat the Scottish team, and so they advanced to play Wales today, and on a rainy pitch in Cardiff, Wales. Unfortunately for Ukraine, Wales ended up winning 1-0 on an own goal. So one of the stars of the Ukrainian team actually put the ball into his own net accidentally, and that was the only goal in the game. And Wales ended up winning 1-0. So, you know, the fairy tale ending that could have been Ukraine, you know, playing through obviously all the horrors that their country's gone through, would have lifted that country up tremendously, did not come to fruition. However, there was a Disney ending of sorts, if you would, for Wales, which had not qualified for the World Cup since 1958, a span of 64 years. It was their only World Cup appearance. And so, you know, as much of a heartbreak as it was for Ukraine, it was awfully cool to see a country like Wales, which has 3 million people, and they've advanced to the World Cup. Ironically enough, their first game will be against the United States. So, there's one player on the Wales team, Gareth Bale, who I've always really liked. He's a pretty amazing striker or offensive player, I should say, on the Wales team. And he'll get to play in the World Cup. So a couple notable things. The other thing took place today, the Rangers were so close to taking a 3-0 lead on the Tampa Bay Lightning. And unfortunately, Tampa Bay came back, scored a goal in the last minute to beat the Rangers. The Rangers are still up 2-1. So Rangers just have to basically win their home games and they could advance to the Stanley Cup Finals, where it looks like they may end up playing the Colorado Avalanche. So that will be interesting around here, but let's not get too far ahead of ourselves. The Rangers still need to take care of the 2-time defending champion Tampa Bay Lightning. So exciting stuff in sports, but what I wanted to talk about today is some lessons from the trail. I ran the North Fork 50K race yesterday. Actually, I understand it's closer to 33 miles, but first time I had put on my trail shoes and put on my my pack and got out in a trail race in quite a long time. You know, with the pandemic and injuries and whatnot, it had been a while, so it was really good to get out there. And the North Fork 50K is run in the hills southwest of Denver. I think we were pretty much always between about 7,500 and 88 feet, a few decent climbs in this race, and all on dirt trail. some of it more like single track, some kind of like double track road, but the vast majority was single track. A lot of it seemed like it was really built more for mountain bikes. We did see a lot of mountain bikes on the trail and just a lot of roller coaster kind of stuff, which made it challenging because I wasn't used to changing gears so much from up and down, and so it was really hard to get a rhythm in some portions of the race. But the first half of the race was really beautiful. You're running up there in really remote areas, a lot of great views. Just very pretty up there. Although we were kind of on the through some of the area that had been burned by the Hayman Fire about 15 years ago. That the Hayman Fire was the largest fire in the state of Colorado's history. Burned, boy, I forget how many hundreds of thousands of acres, and it caused trouble for years and years with just, you know, the runoff because there were no trees left, and just created enormous amounts of damage. And it was actually started by a park ranger, believe it or not, who was burning her love letters in a fire pit, and it got out of control and burned down the entire forest. And so, but that's a whole another story. But we ran through a lot of areas that were, you know, coming back from that. Although 15 years later, it still has a really long way to go to really, in our arid climate out here, to really be able to come back into the forest it once was. There were some just really pretty areas, like some great views of the Continental Divide, of Mount Evans and some of the other mountains over there. The last third of the race I thought was kind of ugly, really, because we're going through a lot of areas that are being very heavily logged. I understand a lot of it is probably fire mitigation so that we don't continue to have really bad fires up there. But man, it seems like they just cut down every tree in sight. And as a result, you ended up kind of exposed by the later part of the day when you're running through that area. Suddenly you have no shade. So got a little hot out there. But overall, nice race. It's a well-run race. And they have a 50K and a 50-mile that goes on. But the race starts out, you go pretty much a steady climb for the first almost 5 miles. And, you know, in the beginning, you're kind of stuck in what I call a train of people. You know, you're kind of locked into their pace, and maybe you go out a little too aggressively because, you know, maybe you should take it easier during probably the steepest climb, which is a longest climb, at least, that you start the race off with, and maybe if you start off a little more gently. But unfortunately, like, say, you get in these trains and you don't want to, you know, kind of fall behind, or you know, it's single file, so it's kind of tough to just jump out of the way, if you would, and let others go ahead. And of course, I think a little bit of your ego kicks in as well. So in any case, got up to that climb, and then as soon as we started heading down, I ended up with severe pain in, I think it's called the lacis lateralis, basically the parts of my quad that are on the outside, not the inside, which we usually think about, the lacis medialis, the VMO. But in this case, it was on the outside. And man, I just couldn't get over how that was just, you know, really bothersome. And, you know, I was trying to run and really struggling with it a bit, but, you know, kept pushing through. And got to the 7.7-mile aid station and saw my crew, which was a couple of young men from the cross-country team I coach at Bear Creek High School. Tristan and Nate came up there, which was great. And they helped me out there, although that was the only place they were actually able to get to crew. And they were they were kind of bitching about the fact that they had about a 4-mile run. Well, actually, I think it was a 5-mile run, but about 4 miles had about, 1,200 feet of climbing total. So they were pretty, in fact, after the race, all they could talk about was how much they killed themselves to get up there, even though I was the one who just had run a 50K race. But in any case, they got themselves up there and they were a good help. And then from there, you head downhill, and it was strange as heck because I didn't get more than a mile away from the aid station and all of a sudden tweaked my calf. And I this seemed like a weird place for that, let that to happen. And I was okay running downhill, but any part that required going uphill, I just couldn't push off of that calf whatsoever. So I ended up kind of doing, anytime I had to go uphill, kind of doing like a gimpy shuffle, if you would. Fortunately, like I say, there was a lot of downhill there, but by this time, though, my quads were starting to feel somewhat better. So I traded the quads for my calf. And, continued along the way. I took a couple diggers, but I mean, and of course, you always do it in the stupidest places. I mean, I think I was on a flat road and tripped and, you know, fell on my arm. I mean, kind of looked back and I'm like, I can't even figure out what I tripped on over there. It was so stupid. So isn't that the way it always happens? You don't trip in the difficult places. So, I kind of worked my way through the calf. And you know, what I was thinking at the time was a lesson I got from David Clark. You know, he and I used to discuss all the time about how he would talk about how, you know, how things get so low in a race and then all of a sudden you just kind of rise up like a phoenix. And I always said, no, I don't. That just never happens to me. For me, most races are just a steady decline. And, you know, if I'm in decent training, that decline will happen more slowly, and usually, you know, my death knell will be after the finish line. If I'm, you know, not in as good shape, then it just becomes literally just a death march to the finish line. I never recover there. So, yeah, I thought about that a lot during the race. So there's kind of my first lesson here. It's just, I kept thinking, you know, there's always an opportunity for a comeback. I can always push through, you know, the old adage that, you know, just get to the next aid station, just get to the next mile, or just take another step. I always thought, you know, if I'm going downhill, I can always run another step, just loosen up my hips, just let things go. I can always just let it roll downhill, or even if it's not downhill, I can always put another foot in front of the other. Even going uphill, the way my calf was feeling, I just could always keep moving forward, and that's what I did. And you know, I just always kept faith that, you know, maybe I'd have that phoenix moment that David always described. And certainly that is a really good life metaphor, isn't it? No matter how bad things get, there's always hope that there's going to be that phoenix moment where you can just keep moving forward and things are going to turn themselves around. But the key is just keep moving forward, because as soon as you quit on yourself, then obviously there's going to be no chance at ever having that moment to move forward. So kind of like my New York Rangers, that the motto is there's no quit in New York. Well, there should be no quit in you either. Just keep moving forward and things typically work themselves out. Later on the race, we kind of got in this really, what I thought was an ugly loop of this area where they were doing heavy logging in this area. So we were running on this road that heavy equipment had gone over, and, you know, it was basically a hard dirt road that obviously there'd been some rain and even some snow recently. And, you know, basically it turned this road into now bumpy mud, and it was just really uncomfortable to run on. Of course, you're running through all these areas where the trees have all been logged and heavy equipment all around. And later on, when you got out of the logging area, but you're through areas that had already been logged. And basically, as I mentioned, you're kind of out in the sun, and, you know, it was not very attractive. But we got up to the last aid station, which it was about 5.5 miles from the finish line. And at that point, the course is basically all fairly steeply downhill. And running downhill on non-technical trail has always been my forte. I'm still trying to work on the uphill. I know I'm going to need that a lot in the Leadville 100 when I get to that nasty, you know what, on Hope Pass. But downhill running's always been great for me. And so I just basically took off at this point. And amazingly, I started feeling good, you know, just as David had always portended, if you would. You know, I just started feeling good. I was able to roll downhill, and, you know, a lot of those aches and pains started to go away. Now, I was still, you know, I was fighting other things, you know, the just being out there that long and the dehydration factor. I thought I was doing a pretty good job hydrating, but it was a warm day eventually, and so I just wasn't able to keep up with being as hydrated as I should, but kept working at it, and then I just rolled down that hill. I mean, I was passing people, and I was flying past people coming down, especially down, there was some single track, and just kind of winded around. It was really kind of beautiful because we were more in the forest and a prettier part of the course. I just flew down there, down to the finish line. Ironically enough, I did have a stop there because I ran into a young man who I used to coach who has done this exact same race a few times and was running up to go pace someone in the 50 miler. So I had a little bit of a delay there, but got down to the finish line. I was 8 hours, 8 minutes, and ran with Nate and Tristan for the last, half mile in, I guess. And I was second in my ancient age group. But this race only just goes 60 and up. So, wow, I'm in the oldest age group anymore. You know, when you're 2,080 years old like I am, you know, just everything is, you're just in the oldest age group. So, so basically, you know, it was a good experience. So, so like I said, the first lesson is just, you know, how David always talked about there is always time for that resurrection out there. And it did happen. Like I say, I needed a long downhill section. I don't know what would have happened if I had to turn back uphill again. But I think also knowing that all I had was downhill to go, let me just completely unleash it, which was great. The other thing was I was really not prepared for this race in terms of training. You know, with track season, I don't get on the trails or do the long runs I need to do nearly as much. So I've really cranked it up since the end of track season, which ended the weekend before Memorial Day. So really only been a couple of weeks. I've really been getting on the trails again. I did my highest volume week a week ahead of time, culminating with a 22-mile run on fairly flat ground. So, you know, it wasn't like the terrain I was going to run on, but I don't think I'd done much in the way of any kind of longish runs over about 10 or 12 miles until I did the 22 miler. Again, it was just a matter of let's push the envelope. You know, I figured, you know how to do a long run, even if I haven't, I've run consistently, but I haven't done the mileage. So here's what I did when I did that 22 mile run. It took me 4 hours, and basically I built in a 2 minute walk every 20 minutes for the first 3 hours. And then for the fourth hour, I did that 2 minute walk every 15 minutes. And, you know, I think that is a great way to increase the longevity on your long runs is just have a walk built in. Now it's a little easier when I was on a course where it was kind of, you know, like say it was flat. So I knew exactly that, you know, when my watch hit 20 minutes, I was going to be able to take a walk. It's a little more difficult if you're out on the trail, because sometimes you may want to do those walks based on the terrain you're on. You know, if you come to the point where you're supposed to walk and you're on a long downhill section, well, maybe you want to maybe postpone that walk a little bit, but like I say, it was a good way to at least get that long run in there. And so then I'm jumping into a 50K trail race up at a little higher elevation. And so, you know, the whole thing was, I just looked at it as it's going to hurt. I'm not truly prepared for it, but it's going to be a good way for me to prepare for Leadville and for, you know, other long runs I'm going to do. Plus, it gave me an opportunity to experiment a little bit with gear and with hydration, and some nutrition. I mean, I always race very heavily eating fruit. I mean, at this race, I ate a lot of watermelon, bananas, and clementines that they had. But you know, I experimented around with some different kinds of gels. One that I like is called Muir Energy, and it's really kind of like ground up cashews or almonds, and it's really more like real food. I also use the Spring Energy gels, which are made. They're actually vegan based, and Sage Cannaday, the very well-known ultra runner, has been behind developing a lot of their products. So I do like theirs a lot. At the aid stations, they had some honey stinger gels, which went down just fine. Like I said, I tried a few different things with drinks between Tailwind and Noon, and even they have a spring electrolyte drink that comes in it looks like a gel pack, and you just open it up and pour it in your water bottle. That one didn't sit as well with me for some reason, even though the gels seem to work pretty well with me. But again, just had a chance to experiment with some different things. Most of the other food I ate were Fig Newtons. I do like those a lot. I'm not a big fan. You know, a lot of these aid stations have all sorts of candy. I mean, they had, you know, Skittles and gummy bears and Snickers bars there. I'm not really into that kind of thing. But I find by sticking with fruit and, if you would, the more natural kind of gels, then I think I seem to do pretty well out there fuel-wise. So, but the whole lesson there also is that, you know, just to go for it. You know, again, I was not ready for this, but, you know, how long am I going to put this off for? I mean, Leadville is going to be, I don't know, probably 10 weeks away. So I needed to get out there and start taking care of things in advance, between everything from toughening up my feet to toughening up my muscles. And I definitely, you know I've got to do a lot more work in that category, to just, you know, figuring out gear, for instance. You know, I think Jason Koop in his podcast, with his Koopcast, which I highly recommend to any of you, If you want tips for running ultras, talked about in a recent episode with a guest about trying out your gear, even if it doesn't seem appropriate. For instance, running with your headlamp during the day. People look at you like you're nuts, but how do you know what it's really like to have that headlamp on your head in the race until you've actually run with it? So sometimes even just run with it during the day, sometimes run around with trekking poles if you're going to use them in a race, even if it may not be the greatest terrain for it, but at least get used to using those trekking poles and so on. You get the idea there. So this was just an opportunity for me to test some things out in a live situation. 50K, I know that's a long distance to a lot of you, but once you've run 100 miles, 50K, or actually it was about 33 miles, about a third of the 100 miler, it's, it is doable. I've run marathons as training runs, so, it's just something you run, you try out, and it was a good opportunity. So those are the couple things that I would recommend to you. One is, first of all, believe that there's always that time for the rising phoenix during the race. Just keep pushing through whatever's going on, because there's always that time when suddenly things just brighten up and you can go. And secondly, don't hesitate getting out there. Maybe you're not prepared. I mean, how many times are we ever really prepared well for a race that we're undertaking? Get out there, push yourself beyond the limit. Again, you're running for 8 hours. Well, the previous tops I had was 4 hours just the week before. And that topped my previous long run, probably doubled it. I probably doubled it every couple weeks there. I went from 2 hours to 4 hours to 8 hours, just like that. So I'm not going to do 16 hours next week, but maybe that'll come up here a little bit later before Leadville. So there's my other life lesson. As I've preached many times before, we're not always prepared for another step we want to take, whether it's to write that book or to start a new business or start a new exercise program, start a weight loss program, whatever it is. But you know what? Go with what you have. It's always worth starting. As Ed Barnett has always said, just start. And so don't hesitate. You may not be 100% ready. We never will be. And if we have to wait till we're always 100% ready, that is the definition of procrastination. We'll find some excuse not to start. So just jump in like I did in this race and just go for it. Those are my two little nuggets for you. So I thank you for joining me for the We Are Superman podcast. Please get in touch if you have any questions about ultra running, any advice that you may want to chit chat about. We can talk about your plans for your summer racing, and happy to help you in any way I can. I hope some of these power plays are helpful to you, but always happy to chat with you one-on-one. We can talk on the phone. We can text each other, message each other on Instagram or Facebook, whatever. Always love to be able to help you out here, whatever kind of general questions you may have. So again, thank you for listening. Make sure you subscribe so you can load all new episodes onto your phone. And if you enjoy the podcast, the best thing you can do is share it with your friends or on social media. And please take a minute, give us a 5-star rating, and I would be humbly honored if you would write a review as well. These 5-star ratings and reviews really do help us make more episodes and rise higher in the podcast services algorithms for search algorithms, helping more people find our show. So until next time, always be positive.